Thank you, boys. It's nice that you get a clap. I never get a clap in this place. I tell you, week after week, I've been working here for 13 years, and I never, ever get a round of applause. Come on, come on. Enough. All right. This morning I want us to think about this story that's just been read to us. Very important story, probably one of Jesus' best known stories, the story of the Good Samaritan. Although it's not headed like that, it's simply a story about who is my neighbour, and that's what we're thinking about this morning. Now here's a question for you, let's see what you think about this. What four key ingredients do you need to make a church? Okay, what four key ingredients do you need to make a church? Anybody want to volunteer an idea? Go on.
You need people to be members of the church.
You need people. Good. Okay. People. Tamara? Sorry? You what? You need the Word of God. So you need the Bible. Okay. Somebody back there. Yeah. Yeah.
Money.
Okay. I'm looking forward to counting this off a bit later on. Sounds like a good lad. You come and join us if you like, actually. We like your sort. Anybody else? Sorry, I saw another hand. Yes. You need? I'm deaf. Yes. Space. Building space. Okay. Building space. Love. There's one. Yeah. You need structure. This is all our personalities coming out. I'm looking forward to talking to you later. You need, yeah, okay, come on in. You need a pastor? Absolutely you do, yeah, yeah. Actually, I grew up in a church that never had a pastor. So it's interesting, isn't it? Okay, anybody else? Yeah.
Food.
Savannah never eats, she never eats at home. We must have food, yeah, yeah. We tend to do that kind of stuff, yeah, okay. You need what? You need the power of God. Okay, so you've all said things that are not on my list of four. It's brilliant, isn't it? But here's the thing. This is a man that I have a lot of time for who has sadly died now, but used to work in East London and did his thinking about God in an area where there was great poverty and hardship. And he was in a discussion one time about the Church of England and whether the Church of England should cease to be the state church. And some people were saying it would be a terrible thing if the Church of England ceased to be a state church. And he said the church only needs four things to be the church. It needs vision, memory, water, bread and wine. It's interesting, isn't it? It doesn't say that in the Bible, so you can have your own views on all of this, and some of the things you said are really, really good. But there it is, vision, memory, water, bread and wine. And for a few minutes this morning, I want to think about memory, because it's Remembrance Sunday. And I want us to think about the word as well, because if you break the word down, it starts re, which means again, like repeat and all that kind of stuff. And then it's got member, and we'll come to that at the end, about how you remember. Because in order to remember, you need to put something back together again. You need to go through the detail of the whole thing. 2 weeks ago, Lois and I went for a short break to Poland with a couple of friends of ours. And on one of the days that we were there, we went to Auschwitz. I was kind of mindful that we had Remembrance Sunday coming up, because for some of you, when you hear the name Auschwitz, you only think of one thing. In fact, the village where Auschwitz is used to be called something else. When the Germans invaded Poland in 1939, they gave it a new name and became known as Auschwitz. And I want to show you a few pictures of what happened in Auschwitz. Can we take the first slide? We went on a little tour of the area. And one of the first things I saw was a sign up by a Spanish philosopher who said this: those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So when you do history at school, it's actually quite a useful thing to do. And I don't know about other people, the older I get, the more and more interested I get in history. We went into what was known as a concentration camp. Next slide, please. You've probably seen this picture before. Arbeit macht frei. Work makes you free. But the reality of that place was anything but that. When Germany invaded Poland, they imprisoned a whole lot of Polish people. Now, I need to make a distinction, as I say, when Germany invaded Poland, because it was when the Nazis invaded Poland. Nazism was a particularly nasty thing that happened in Germany in the 1930s, and it still goes on around the world. And when we talk to Teresa, who's our volunteer this year from Germany, and say when the Germans invaded Poland, I need to make a little distinction in my head and think, well, Teresa's not like that. Actually, it was the Nazis that invaded Poland. And she reminded us when she went to the Maritime Museum, she said, oh, you English, you did slavery, didn't you? So you're not that great. Anyway, we went in to this place. They herded lots and lots of Polish people in and made them work for the whole Nazi regime. At bedtime, this is where they would go. If we could take the next slide. They put a pile of mats down and you slept side by side. Gradually, as they tried to cram more and more people in, if you take the next slide, it would look like this. You would get three or four people on each level and in a barrack, which would be smaller than this space, smaller than this people. They crammed 700 people in at night time and they had to sleep in those little hovels like that. Take the next picture. People didn't survive very long. We walked down a hallway and we saw picture after picture of Polish prisoners who had died in the camp. The most that any of them lasted was about 18 months. The food that they received, the squalor of the conditions. You can imagine when you concentrate lots of people in a camp, it's squalid and the conditions that you live in and the sanitation and you quickly get ill. Take the next picture, you'll see a closer picture of some of those people. All sorts of different ages. There were people there who were 21, 22-year-old men. It wasn't just men either. On the other side of the wall, there were pictures of women who'd been put in there. I remember distinctly two pictures side by side. Twin sisters, they were 16 years old. They'd been put in the concentration camp and made to work. One of them died after 3 months. The other died after 5 months. Horrible that people could do that to other people. Take the next picture. From there it moved outwards. The Nazis decided that they needed bigger premises. So they went 3 miles down the road and they evacuated seven villages. They knocked them down and they built their biggest concentration camp of all. It's called Birkenau, or Auschwitz II. And you probably will have seen that picture because people arrived into the camp on trains and went through. And there it became not just a concentration camp for Polish people, but there it became the place where the Nazis took the Jews to get rid of them. They built in this huge complex, and we take the next picture. They built barracks across the whole complex. Those were the barracks, 700 people in each of those. Some of them who were fit enough would work, but when women and children came along, particularly pregnant women, they were no use to the Nazis at all. And so what they did with them was simply to gas them to death and then to burn them to death. Around the camp were four huge incinerators. I won't go into the long detail of this, but in each incinerator, they could gas 2,000 people every single day, and then they would burn the bodies. I imagine that there must be an appalling smoke that crept across the camp. And yet, even though that was the case, next picture, people would arrive. This is a Jewish family. People would arrive thinking they were going to a better life. That was the lie that they had been told. They would arrive in the camp. They would be taken into the shower rooms and told, go and have a shower, and then we're going to take you on to your better life. What they didn't realize was that the shower rooms were gas chambers, and Zyklon B, the little capsules of gas, would be dropped through the roof, and there they would perish. Took 15 to 20 minutes. They were all dead at the end of it. How is it that a group of human beings can do that to another group of human beings? I hear Andrew's prayer from earlier, because there's something like that in all of us. It didn't go to that extreme, maybe, but there's something in all of us that can dismiss certain people as not being interesting enough to have our attention. I think that's the last picture. Let's look at the next one. Oh, that was the other thing. The Nazis thought of everything. They didn't want to waste anything at all. So when people changed to go into the showers, they would shave the women's hair, and they would keep the hair and manufacture them into carpets. They would take the shoes of people and keep them and reuse them. And there you see not just the shoes of adults, but the shoes of children. It was a horrible, meticulous operation. And Teresa tells us that in Germany, in schools in Germany now, they get taught the horrors of Nazism, just how bad it was. And yet, sadly, across the world, you see people even today making a Nazi salute and thinking that actually fascism is okay. It's not okay. Let me jump forward a little bit, or jump over to France, and tell you about a woman called Irene Loret. She died in 1987, and when the Times newspaper wrote her obituary, they described her as a healer of wounds, but it wasn't always that way. She had lived through the First World War, and after the First World War was over and Germany was downtrodden and beaten, she would take children to come and live with her family. But when the Second World War began and the Nazis invaded France, she became part of the French resistance movement. And during that period, her son was arrested and he was tortured by the Gestapo. During that period, she witnessed the opening of a mass grave in which many of her colleagues and friends had perished. When the war was over, she hated Germany. And a couple of years later, she was elected to be part of the French National Assembly. And following that, in 1947, she was invited to a conference in Switzerland called the Moral Rearmament Conference. When she got to the conference, which she was looking forward to, the rebuilding of Europe and all of that, she discovered that there were Germans in the hall. And she got up and she walked out. And as she was walking out, in disgust, one of the pastors who was present there said to her, how can you possibly hope to rebuild Europe by excluding people? She went back to her room and she grappled with that for 2 days. How can you hope to rebuild the world by just excluding people? Can't be the solution. And she thought and thought about it for 2 days. And on the third day, she came out and she met a young German woman. This woman was not a Nazi. She was part of the German resistance movement to the Nazis. And for a day, they spoke to each other, and then they prayed with each other. And on the following day of the conference, Irene Loret stood up, and she confessed the bitterness and the hatred that she had felt. And she begged the forgiveness of those German people. She subsequently made 200 speeches about reconciliation, and at the start of every speech she would say the same thing. She would say, this is how I felt, and I've asked forgiveness over and over again for those feelings. Now let me take you to the story. Take the next picture, please. Let's think about the Good Samaritan. That's not what they look like, is it, in the Bible story? But what can you see on the screen there? You can see an American being looked after by a Native American. Now, any of you know a little bit of history will know that a few hundred years ago, people went from Europe, particularly from England, out to America, and they found there a group of Native Americans who were already living there, but they decided that they wanted the land, and so there was a battle going on between. When I was a kid, I used to watch cowboy films. How many of you ever watched cowboy films? Okay, the cowboys were always the goodies, the Indians were always the baddies, until quite lately, when we discovered actually they had the land before we did. You know, what were we doing going over there and nicking their space? And actually, you don't get cowboy films like that anymore. But what's interesting about this is that two people who you would have thought hated each other, one jumps out of the box and turns out that they actually care. This is the story of the Good Samaritan. So here's a man on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. He's traveling along, and on the road, he gets attacked, and he gets beaten up, and he gets mugged, and presumably has all his possessions taken away from him, and he's bleeding, and he's in a bad way, and he's lying on the road. Some of us have been down that road from Jerusalem to Jericho. It's a long way down. Jericho is the lowest city on earth, 1,300 feet below sea level, just along from the Dead Sea. Nothing goes lower than the Dead Sea. And on the way down that road, he gets beaten up. And along the road comes a priest, a Jewish priest. Well, what a stroke of luck that is, isn't it? Here's a, not just another Jew, but a Jewish priest, a holy man, a caring man. And the priest looks at him. And the priest thinks, is he dead or is he alive? Well, if he's dead and I touch him, I'm not supposed to touch dead people because I'll become unclean, and I'm a priest and I have to do my job. And so he crosses the road and he passes on by. And then another Jew comes along, and he's a Levite, and the Levite are actually the priestly tribe, so it's all these holy people. And he doesn't want to get involved either. Maybe he just got something else he's got to do and he doesn't actually want to stop and do it. And then along the road comes a Samaritan. Well, there's no chance of him stopping because Jews and Samaritans didn't get on. They really did hate each other. They used to be part of the same nation, but the nation had split and they'd gone their separate ways. And by the time Jesus told this story, Jews absolutely hated Samaritans. Don't let their kids near Samaritans. They'll just be a bad influence on them. Just keep them well away and all of that. But the Samaritan jumps out of his box and he comes across and he helps the man. And not only that, he puts him on his donkey. He walks to the nearest inn, he gets him in there, he gives the innkeeper 2 days' wages to look after him. And he says, I'm coming back when I've done my business, I'm coming back in a couple of days. And if he still needs help, I'll give you some more money. And Jesus said to the man who'd asked him the question, so who was the neighbor? Well, you would have thought it was the priest and the Levite because they came from the same tribe, the same nation. But it wasn't, it was actually the Samaritan who acted like the neighbor. And that's the big challenge to us. Jesus once told the story of some sheep and some goats. And he said, at the final judgment, there will be sheep and goats, and God will divide between the sheep and the goats. And the sheep, who are supposed to be the nice ones, will go to everlasting destruction. And the sheep say, why? Why are you doing this to us? Because we're nice people. And Jesus says, because when I was in trouble, you didn't help me. When I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When I was thirsty, you didn't give me a drink. And the sheep will say, but we never did see you hungry. And we never did see you thirsty. And we never did see you in trouble. In fact, if we had seen you, of course we would have helped, Jesus. And Jesus says, well, inasmuch as you didn't feed the other hungry people that you see all around you, you didn't give drinks to the thirsty people you see around you, inasmuch as you didn't help the people who were from other races or other tribes or who were not part of your group, inasmuch as you didn't do that, well, you didn't do it to me then. You didn't help me. And the goats, but I've got the two mixed up, haven't I? The clever scholars among you realise I should have said the goats in the first place. The sheep were the ones who did look after Jesus. But you get the drift of where the story is going. It's down to what you do and whether or not you act like a neighbor to the people around you. Now, I said at the beginning of this that when you break the word down, remember, it's quite an important word. So on the screen, you'll see another image here of black and white and religious people here. What Jesus is trying to get you to think about is these different divisions that we have in our society and how he wants to heal those divisions. But let's take the next slide. This is something that we often say at communion. We think about the way in which Jesus, in his hands and his feet, and all of the things that he did. And then we say this at the end of communion. And I want you to say this with me. We have taken bread and wine into our bodies. Now may these hands be the hands of Christ in the world. May they do no violence. May these eyes see those who are overlooked. May these ears listen to those who are unheard. May these voices be raised for the voiceless, lest our songs of praise be empty. May these feet take us where Christ leads. And may these hearts and minds be open to his spirit. Christ has remembered us. May we remember Christ. That's what we do Sunday by Sunday in church. We put Jesus back together again. We take him apart, in a sense, to understand and remember what he actually did. And then we embrace that for ourselves and try and do it in the future. We've come today on a day which remembers so many people who died. We go out as the Church of Christ to make life better for people. And so we remember the past and we get clear about where things have gone wrong. And then we have a vision for the future and the kind of world that we want to build. And I hope that all of us, whether we're older, whether young people, some of you here just occasionally for our EYLA services, you'll make something of your lives where you will be well remembered when they write your obituary as somebody who is a healer of wounds. Let's just pray together.